Hello, this is Bob Kruger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Thought for Food. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. During the month of December, we may well be part of a festive dinner, and I have these exact suggestions to make everything go more smoothly. Set a definite time. This will save you the monotony of having to repeat. Answer the question, when do we eat? Make friends and family welcome. The more the merrier really puts everyone in a happy mood with all their best on their best behavior. When there are guests, dinner becomes an event, the day's main activity. Manners improve, conversations ramp up, and people linger longer. No phones. Do not answer the phone during dinner. Do not allow any cell phones at the table. No ringing, vibrating, answering, or texting allowed. One menu for all. You're not doing your kids any favor by allowing them not to eat what's served. Be prepared for initial stubbornness and a few uneaten meals. That phase won't last long. Everyone helps clean up. Clean up is faster when everyone chips in. It's more fun. Many hands make work light, as they say. Rotate the duties so nobody gets stuck always taking out trash or washing pots and pans. Enjoy your festive occasion. Someone has said there's nothing as sacred as our holiday traditions, and this includes the holiday meal. Let's face it. Whether anyone says so or not, we look forward to the traditional dishes we had last year and the years before. I can remember such a meal that had a much different main course than normally served, and I overheard two of the adult grandchildren say, I was looking forward to the traditional holiday menu. In this case, it was the younger members of the family that were disappointed. If you're daring, you might add a new side dish to your menu, especially if it's a new way to prepare something you know most of your guests like. We Americans paid more for our Thanksgiving turkeys this year. The same situation will hold true for a Christmas turkey. Why? The rising cost of feed led to a reduced output in the United States. U.S. wholesale frozen turkeys have jumped to a new high and are up 28% from a year earlier, according to Russell Whitman of the commodity researchers Erner Berry of Toms River, New Jersey. At the end of September, stockpiles of turkey meat slid 23% from a year earlier, government data shows. Production will decline 1.3% this year to 5.514 billion pounds, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The price of corn, which makes up 70% of turkey feed, was up 47% so far this year. The fundamental reason why we see record high turkey prices is the fact we're seeing the record high cost of raising turkeys, says Tom Elam, who's president of Farm Econ LLC, an agricultural and food industry consultant. The U.S. retailers sold whole frozen turkeys for an average price of $1.57 a pound in September, up 7.7 from a year earlier, and the highest level since at least 1980, the Labor Department said in October. Although his government statistics don't capture holiday discounting by grocers for holiday, retail prices usually cut prices to spur the sales of accompanying items for the holiday dinner, such as cranberry sauce, green beans, or stuffing mix. Retail prices, even with specials, will be higher this year. Last year, Walmart stores, the world's largest retail, cut prices on turkey, selling a whole 12-pound bird for 40 cents a pound. That level of pricing probably won't be around this year, Elam said. Some retailers probably are going to lose money because customers still expect discounts. Whitman said retailers stand the real possibility of losing more money than last year due to high wholesale prices. The consumer has really come to expect low-priced turkeys even during the most popular time of the year. Most grocers secured their supplies in February and March, and they had incentive to do so this year because stockpiles were expected to be tight by November. For those who didn't buy early or need more now, they'll be forced to pay top dollar to preserve customer loyalty, making sure there's enough turkey for the holidays, Whitman said. There'll be enough to go around, said Kelly Ziering, Associate Professor and Extension Specialist in the Department of Agriculture and Resource Economics at NC State University. It might be that if you wait until the last minute, you might have fewer to choose from than you did last year. Every 5 years, the federal government updates its dietary guidelines for Americans. And this year, with so many Americans overweight or obese and the risk of high blood pressure, policymakers are working to reinvent the food pyramid and develop advice that's simple and blunt enough to help turn the tide. Although most people do not read them, guidelines have broad impact on America's lives. They dictate what is served in school breakfasts and lunches, what is printed in educational materials used by SNAP, formerly called food stamps, and the development of information on the nutritional labels of food packaging. They also underpin education materials available in community centers, doctor's offices, and hospitals. What the guidelines will say when they are revealed this month is still under wraps, but the interagency committee is searching for new ways to communicate lessons about healthful eating and is working to make the food pyramid more meaningful and engaging, said Robert Post, the deputy director of the USDA's Center for Nutrition and Policy Promotion, which is leading the development of the guidelines. Healthful eating has gained a high profile through Michelle Obama's Let's Move initiative to fight childhood obesity. But historically, the government has shied away from offering controversial advice. And with food, everything is controversial. Example, a boost in one kind of food in the guidelines can be viewed as a threat to the providers of competing products. The result, critics say, is a nutritional education system so politically influenced that it's ineffective. This year's process appears to be no exception. In public comments, the meat lobby has opposed strict warning on sodium that has cast a negative light on lunch meats. The milk lobby has expressed concerns about warnings to cut back on added sugars lest chocolate and strawberry-flavored milks fall from favor. Several members of the Massachusetts congressional delegation also weighed in against added sugar in defense of the cranberry. This is a real test of whether this administration is serious about helping people change their diets, said Margot Wooten, the director of nutrition at the Center for Science in the Public Interest, the Washington-based public health watchdog. Even if the political will is there, developing useful advice remains a challenge. It has to be broad enough to apply to myriad ethnic and other taste preferences. It must be prescriptive enough to provide guidance to shoppers who have to choose between tens of thousands of products on grocery shelves and are befuddled by ever-changing nutritional information. We can't load down people with different messages, Post said. We have to focus on practical, simple, easily applied messages that show action that consumers can take. According to a study conducted by the International Food Informational Council, an industry trade group, 46% of consumers agree that food and health information is often confusing and conflicting. Eggs, once shunned because of cholesterol, are now praised for their protein content. Carbohydrates, once exiled from fashionable plates, are back in style, provided they come from whole grains. But we only guess at what form the new guidelines will appear. Speaking of healthful foods, how about the apple? In a recent column, Suzanne Havala Hobbs shared some ideas about the apple. She says, "It's apple time, the season to appreciate the good taste, the versatility, and the nutritional value of one all-American fast food you should eat more often." You may be surprised to learn that North Carolina ranks 7th in the country in apple production. Close to half the apples grown here are marketed in their national form, fresh. That's the best way to eat apples because it ensures you get full advantage of all the nutrients the fruit contains. An apple isn't a vitamin and mineral powerhouse like a peach or a blueberry, but it does contain a reasonable range of nutrients and good dose of dietary fiber. It's low in all the things a snack should be low in: sodium, saturated fat, trans fat, and artificial colorings and flavorings. There are thousands of varieties of apples, and they're all similar in nutritional value. You can feel free to eat whatever types you like best. Around here, about a dozen varieties are the most popular, including Red Delicious, Stamen, Gala, Granny Smith, Gold Rush, Honeycrisp, and Pink Lady. What you choose depends entirely on personal preference and how you plan to use the apples. The general guideline is that any type of apple is good for eating raw, but firm, tart apples are the best for cooking or baking. Good choices for cooking and baking include the Granny Smith, the Rome Beauty, the Stamen, and Empire. Sweet apples for eating fresh include Red Delicious, Gala, Jonna Gold, and Fuji. Apples tend to lend sweetness to foods they're added to, reducing the sugar needed in many recipes, including muffins and sweet potato casserole. You can incorporate apples into your diet a number of ways. Chop them up and add them to cooked or cold cereals, muffins, and pancake batter and green salads. Eat them baked whole as a dessert with a scoop of non-fat vanilla yogurt and some maple syrup, or cooked to a crisp, topped with a little oatmeal and a little brown sugar. Try dipping them into peanut or almond butter for a nutritious snack with staying power. When you shop for apples, buy organic when possible. Apples are one of the dirty dozen fruits and vegetables identified by the nonprofit Environmental Working Group as being most likely to contain increased levels of chemical residues used to combat fungi and insects. Washing and peeling don't eliminate the residue, and peeling removes beneficial fiber. Even if you can't consistently buy organic, eating more fresh produce is one of the most important lifestyle changes we can make for overall balance it can bring to the nutritional value of your diet. While the fall and early winter might be dominated by the large orange pumpkin, don't forget about the little guys. Pink, yellow, red, and green, the old saying, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, has more than a little truth to it. Have you had your apple today? If you want to get the correct information, go to the source, many people say. And here's an example. Dressed in blue jeans and patiently waiting at a Starbucks kiosk, Dave Dillon blends in easily with Saturday morning shoppers in a suburban Cincinnati supermarket. But he is there on a bigger mission than picking up some groceries. The chairman and CEO of the Kroger Company wants to see one of his stores through a customer's eyes and to understand why she makes the choices she does. On this day, he joins Pat O'Keefe, a stay-at-home mom who loves to cook and shop several times a week for fresh food and ingredients. "Wow, look how pretty that is," she explained at a gleaming array of sea bass, salmon, and other silver, pink, and white seafood. She tells Dillon that the store frequently changes such displays. He already knows that, but it's informative to him that regular customer who says she prizes freshness notices it. Tracking consumers' behavior and spotting shifts have become increasingly important in a weak U.S. economy. In the low-margin, highly competitive grocery business, Kroger has fared better than its competitors. While Safeway fell its most recent earnings report showed a 6% rise in revenue, while Safeway fell 1% and Super Values dropped 9%. Dillon tells Wall Street analysts that the nation's largest traditional store has a sophisticated consumer data none of its competitors can match, but he still does frequent shop-alongs, such as this visit. Visits customers in their homes and peeks into their cupboards, shops stores alone and incognito, and drops in on employees unannounced. Most other top Kroger executives do, too. "The data only tells you so much," says Dillon, whose company has a shopper data mining and marketing joint venture with Dunnhumby, a marketing company based in London. "Dunnhumby tells us what to look for, and I go in and see. Dunnhumby USA collects and analyzes data from the millions of households that use Kroger loyalty cards, along with about 50,000 surveys each quarter to help Kroger adjust marketing, sales, and inventories to specific locations. Kroger is the largest traditional grocery chain in the country. They have more than 2,400 stores in 31 states, including 18 in the Triangle." Here's an example. The numbers told Dillon that shoppers using food stamps at Kroger during this recession have doubled. He started asking questions in the stores and heard repeatedly that many first-time users got confused about what items were allowed under government rules. After seeing one man he had just talked to have an ineligible item rejected, Dillon decided to add information signs and train employees more to help each such customers. "This attitude can only help Kroger stay at least a half a step ahead of their competition." In the October 10 issue of Consumer Reports was an article titled Store Brands versus Name Brands, and I'll share some of their conclusions. The article begins, "Any smart supermarket shopper knows that buying store brands instead of the big name brands can save big bucks. In our latest price study, filling a grocery cart, 30 items with store brands saved us an average of 30%. If you spend $100 a week on groceries, that savings adds up to more than $1,500 in a year. Yet some shoppers are still reluctant to try store brands. The top reason from our nationally representative survey, I prefer name brands. The name brands taste better, and I don't know if store brands are as high in quality. Respondents 18 to 39 years were particularly likely to question the quality of store brands. Shoppers were quite leery of some categories. Although they'll snap up store brand paper goods and plastics, at least half of our survey rarely or never bought store brand wine, pet food, soda, or soup. This may be especially true when the category includes a brand name such as Coca-Cola or Campbell's. The message from our latest taste test, don't be reluctant to give any private label a try. In fact, our results may knock some of the iconic brands off their pedestals. Albertson's peanut butter was similar in quality to Skippy, and Target's Market Pantry ketchup was as good as Heinz. Overall, national brands won 7 of the 21 matchups, and store brands won 3. For the rest, the store brand and the name brand were of similar quality. A tie doesn't mean the taste was identical. Two products may be equally fresh and flavorful with ingredients of similar quality but taste differently because the ingredients or seasons differed. A case in point is ketchup. In Heinz, the spices stands out. Market Pantry is more tomatoey. There's no reason store brands shouldn't hold their own against the national brands. After all, some of the same companies manufacture both. Among the big names that make store brand products are Sara Lee, Reynolds, McCormick, and Manischewitz. Consumer Reports' conclusion is that almost any store brand product is worth a try. There's little risk. Most grocers offer a money-back guarantee if their products don't meet your expectations. The secret's out, said Lisa Ryder, the vice president of retail consulting solutions for Nielsen, the marketing information company. Store brands are just as good. Store brand buyers are no longer seen as cheapskates, but as savvy shoppers. In a recent survey of 1,727 shoppers by Consumer Reports National Research Center, 84% of them had bought store brands in the past year, and 93% of them said they would keep buying store brands after the economy recovers. Nationwide, store brands accounted for almost one of the four products sold in supermarkets and a record $55.5 billion in sales during 2009. I have found that private label cold cereals are very good and often about half the price of some nationally advertised brands. And here's a bit of good news. While the recession took a toll on manufacturing and other industries, one part of the economy has remained a bright spot over the past few years, food production. Across the nation, food producers are seeing more growth that many are expanding and investing in new equipment. For cheesemakers, dairy farmers, and vegetable growers, the slow economy has brought opportunities to expand while construction costs are low. Food makers have benefited from having products that consumers still buy in hard times and from efforts to open markets overseas. The result is growth in sales and facilities. The expansions include cheese-making operations in Wisconsin and Idaho and a sweet potato canning plant in Arkansas. Hershey is spending $200 million to expand and update a plant in its namesake town in Pennsylvania. And General Mills is pouring millions into yogurt plants in Michigan and Tennessee. Even in tough economic times, people are still going to buy groceries, said Barbara Gannon, a spokeswoman for Sargento Foods in Wisconsin. While Chrysler, General Motors, and other companies tied to the auto industry have closed factories in Wisconsin in recent years, Sargento is expanding there. It is adding a multimillion-dollar building to its headquarters in Plymouth. Sargento is the fifth local cheese company to expand in 5 years, Plymouth Mayor Don Pullman said. Their growth has made his job easier when it comes to attracting other companies, he said. Businesses want to be around other businesses that are growing and expanding, Pullman said. The cheese industry here has really helped me sell the city. Gannon says Sargento began considering expansion a few months ago to keep up with demand that has remained brisk even as the economy stalled. The company, best known for its cheddar, Swiss, and provolone, had about $900 million in sales last year and projects about $950 million in sales this year, Gannon said. Other cheesemakers and distributors from Vern's Cheese in Chilton, Wisconsin, to Jerome Cheese in Jerome, Idaho, are expanding factories and office spaces, saying they expect good times to last. 7 mornings a week, Big White, a chunky tank truck, pulls up to the back door at Beecher's Handmade Cheese in Seattle, Washington, to deliver 100 gallons of fresh cow's milk. Collected from small family farms just outside the city, the creamy milk is destined to be transformed into Beecher's award-winning artisan cheeses. The visionary behind this downtown cheese-making enterprise is Carl Damier. A cheese lover since childhood, Damier said he couldn't understand why Seattle didn't have its own cheese. And being a successful entrepreneur with a number of food-related businesses, he set out to correct the situation. Beecher's Handmade Cheese, named for his grandfather, opened its doors in November of 2003, or one could say opened its windows. Visitors walking to Beecher's store look through huge interior windows to see cheese-making in full swing. They can also taste fresh squeaky curds, grab a sandwich or a serving of Beecher's legendary mac and cheese while they watch the cheesemakers drain whey, milk and turn curds and fill cheese forms. Managed by master cheesemaker Brad Cinco, a veteran from the Brandon Creamery in Oregon, Beecher's cheeses are made using the traditional hands-on process that demands expert control and craftsmanship at each step. Beecher's Handmade Cheese is located at 1600 Park Pike Place in Seattle. This is a part of the famous Pike Place Market. That's because cheese is recession food, said John Umhofer, the executive director of the Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association. People are eating more frozen pizza, he said, or adding string cheese to the lunches they're increasingly packing at home. Even if we didn't see this coming, Umhofer said, where a recession is a net positive for cheese sales. Another reason companies are expanding is that the construction and equipment costs have come down. For farmers and other food producers, it's been a good time to invest in heavy equipment. Sales of 100-horsepower tractors, which cost $75,000 to $100,000 each, was up 27% last month over the same month last year, said Charlie O'Brien, the vice president of agriculture services for the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Combined sales also have been up. They're purchasing the equipment because there's pretty good optimism, O'Brien said, of farmers who raise commodities such as corn, soybeans, wheat, and rice. There continues to be a good demand for their commodities. That's partly because China's importing more U.S. food, he said, and poor harvest because of bad weather in countries such as Russia have led to ever greater demand. Michael and Jane Stern have traveled the country over, visiting restaurants, bars, and grills, tasting special foods that people have written about. They've published several books about their discoveries. If you like pie, as I do, listen to their account of 5 great pies. In Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa, where dairy products are so revered that states fair stage butter sculpture competition, sour cream raisin pie is all about the balance of opposites. Mixing together sweet custard and sour cream, velvety filling, and flaky shards of crust. Raisins offer little bits of chew within the custard, playing off the frothy meringue on top. There's none better than the pie at the farmer's kitchen in Atlantic, Iowa, where the meringue is twice as tall as the filling, and the filling is rich as clotted cream. Everything in Texas is bigger, and when it comes to pecan pie, the Lone Star State's Big Nuts take the cake. For a pecan pie can have a fault, it's oversweetness, a problem exacerbated by poor quality pecans. Jumbo Texas pecans, fresh, buff, crunchy, plucked from the state's official state tree, are in a mighty match for the corn syrup that suspends them, creating a 1-2 punch strengthened only by serving the pie warm with ice cream on the top. at Royer's Round Top Cafe in Round Top, Texas. The menu threatens to charge customers 50 cents extra if they don't get the ice cream on the top. Glossy Black and Knobby, the O'Lilyberry looks like a jumbo blackberry, but one bite of a O'Lilyberry pie tells the difference. While the berries are cooked, the heat released a sweetness more like wine than sugar. Partnered with a butter-rich crisp crust, they're the ultimate bramble fruit. All O'Lilyberries grow mainly on a few hundred acres along the Central California coast, and their season is brief, no more than 6 weeks of midsummer. So Dorati's Cafe, a century-old tavern in Pescadero, California, acquires enough to serve pie all year long. Chess pie will not seduce you with confectionery magic. This Dixie favorite is no frills. Its bedrock recipe calls for a little more than eggs, butter, a bit of cornmeal, and sugar. As made at Arnold's, a plate lunch beacon in Nashville, Tennessee, it's a sweet yolk yellow ribbon of silky curds suspended on a crust that's a melt-away frail. Folklore has it that some long-forgotten cook, when asked what was coming from the oven, answered, "Nothing special, just pie." Most likely, it was originally called chest pie because it keeps well in a pie chest. Blueberries are good. Wild Maine blueberries are wildly good, and known as low-bust blues, they're scarcely bigger than buckshot. At Helen's, a restaurant in Michaelis, Maine, population 2100, located 43 miles northeast of Bar Harbor, blueberry pie is made with fresh fruit in a simple syrup with no thickener or anything else to dilute the berries' dizzying flavor. They will ooze out of a slice even before you press it with a fork. How nice to watch that white whipped cream on top turn purple from the juices. No wonder Stephen King has stopped there. I'd like to have a small slice of each of these pies. In another letter to the food editor was asked, what did the markings sell by and best by mean? And when did these markings appear? I don't recall seeing them before about 10 years ago. The answer? There might have been dates on the package before, but you might not have been able to understand them. It used to be common for companies that handle perishable foods to mark packages with codes so that the guy who drove the egg truck or the bread truck knew how long something had been on the shelf. These days, you see more actual dates. It's called open dating when a package has a date instead of a code number. But the language still gets confusing. Except for certain products, including infant formula and some baby food, product dating isn't required by law, and there isn't a universal system. This makes it even more confusing. Some states require certain foods to be dated, and others do not. However, when you see open dating on a perishable product, it usually works like this. Sell by is used by the store or the food company representative to show when to take something off the shelf. Sell-by, or best if only used before, is a quality recommendation. It has nothing to do with safety. The product may be fine for at least a little longer. Used-by is the latest date recommended for peak quality, although the product may be okay for a day or so longer. And I found that some dairy products, cottage cheese, yogurt, and milk, remain eatable well after the date on the container. The direct selling industry, where consultants hold home parties to sell jewelry and makeup and other products, is getting a new player, the Biltmore Company. The Asheville tourist destination announced in September that it plans to start Biltmore Inspirations next year. We've run out of time for this episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen at the same time next month. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service.